Abby Robertson's a classic Enneagram 7, wife to her high school sweetheart Ryan and a mom of four, owner of Wild Horses Salon. Her tremendous gift of encouragement and faithfulness transformed the lives of her family. Hi friends, you've made it to Karina Faith Diaries, your new go-to spot for real talk about the journeys that shape our faith. I'm Karina, your host, and I'm super excited to chat about real-life struggles, wins, and everything in between. This is all about honest conversations, lifting each other up, and the power of a relationship with Jesus. Whether you're here to learn, connect, or to get inspired, let's get started together. Abby, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Nice to meet you. She's friends. Abby's very good friends with Heather, our producer, and she's just talks about you all the time and how amazing your story is. So I'm very excited to have you in.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks.
Yay. Okay, so tell me a little bit about you and how did you grow up and who is Abby?
Okay, so I was born into a Christian home, great parents, both of them. You know, they're a little crazy, but they're awesome, good people who raised me to love the Lord and love people and definitely put a big emphasis on marriage, which ended up playing out well in my story. I met Ryan in seventh grade. We were in science class together. I'd say we were instantly pretty flirty. We started dating in eighth grade, the very end of eighth grade. We laugh when we talk about it because, as you'll hear, it wasn't perfect road all the way along.
There's some cute, is, right? Yeah,
there's some cute, wonderful things about it, but then I'm definitely not going to like encourage my kids like you should try and find someone, you know, when you're 13. It's a great idea.
Wow. Yeah.
We got married right when he finished college. So we were 23, 24.
So you dated your entire lives, basically.
We did. Had four kids, Lucy, Darla, Reggie, and Riggs. Okay. They're 3, 5, 8, and almost 10.
Okay. How long have you guys been married?
So now it's been almost 15 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you guys waited a little bit to have children.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Essentially. Yeah.
Okay.
We were married about 4.5 years, I guess. Yeah. 4.5 years before we had Lucy.
So was he a Christian also or?
He grew up Catholic. And I think by the time he was in like junior high, high school, him and his twin brother, he has a twin, they were pretty good athletes. And I think just classic sports got in the way. And I think he got confirmed in the Catholic Church, but they didn't do much with the church at that point because they were just real busy. There was a huge emphasis on church in my growing up. My mom's first question to like anybody who walked in the door was always, do you know Jesus?
Oh, is she like evangelical Christian or do you have like a, okay. So pretty passionate. Right.
Yeah.
Fired
oh,
up
very, oh, yes, like, yes, yes. Okay. Yes. She definitely wants everyone to know Jesus. You know, sometimes that drove us crazy as kids because she was very like, I don't know. I'd have boys over and she'd be like, okay, before you guys leave, we're going to learn a Bible verse. Like she was very, very like that.
Very passionate.
All the time. Yeah. So as soon as she met Ryan, you know, that was her first question. It was on my radar too. So he very quickly started going to church with our family and not like necessarily every single weekend or whatever. I can't even really remember, but he liked the non-denominational church. I mean, he has nothing serious against the Catholic Church at all. He just started coming to know the Lord a lot more and learning a lot more at church than he had previously.
I can totally relate to that because I was brought up as a Catholic too. Okay. My whole family's Catholics.
Yeah.
And I never really knew Jesus. And I know that there's a lot of different Catholics. So I'm not saying Catholics are like that. But to me, it was in the way that it was so old school where we went that it was just a very like a ritualistic thing that you never...
I think for kids, it's hard too.
Yeah, very. Yeah. And going to our church, it was just instant fire. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yes.
I want to have a relationship with Jesus.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, wow. So he kind of fell like that.
And I will say on the Catholic Church tip, I just started seriously reading through the Bible for the first time ever. Mm-hmm. It's embarrassing. It took me so long to like actually dive in. And it's because of the Old Testament, but mm-hmm. I'm doing the Bible recap. Have you ever heard of that?
I think I have.
It's awesome.
What is that?
It's the one-year Bible plan. After every day, she has a five-minute recap of what you just read. Oh. And so she makes it make sense so you don't feel like you're reading it just to read it.
Okay.
And so I'm finally understanding that. I say all this because in the past when I went to Catholic Church, I'd be like, what is this? Like, I don't know anything I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. Now it at least makes sense to me. Like, yes. It's a lot more traditional, and a lot of that I feel like comes from the Old Testament. And the last time I went, I actually thought it was cool. Nonetheless, we go to a non-denominational church, and I love that too.
What is that? Is that like a group that you're doing, a group study? Or
I'm doing it on my own. I think they have groups within it.
Okay.
It's very...
But is it like a video?
I have it on the Bible app when you go to like My Plans.
Oh, okay.
Tara Lee Cobble is her name, and it's called the Bible Recap. Okay. A girl from one of my Bible studies told me about it, and I was like, okay, I have to do that.
That's great. I feel like this is so good to give people resources too, because not all of us are like on the same track.
No.
Like, and I know the Bible is very intimidating too. It's just like people don't. So yeah. If you have a guidance like this, I think
yeah,
it's great.
No, and I've been a loud Christian my whole life, where I like want everyone to know Jesus. And it was about 10 years ago, I was in somebody's small group, and we were watching this like old school chick on a video. I can't remember what her name is, but she talked about how many people haven't read the Bible. And yeah. She was like, so you're going to get to heaven and tell God you were too busy to read the one book. And I was like, ugh. And so it's bugged me ever since, but it still took me so long. Like,
yes.
And I've tried to start a million times, but every time I was just like, I'm falling asleep. I don't know what I'm reading. Mm. And I just wouldn't stick it out. And now I realize if I would have, it puts itself together.
It does. And we need to ask for the Holy Spirit's guidance,
100%.
Right? So it's just like, before you open, like, help me to understand this, because we do need kind of supernatural understanding to
100%.
Understand
I agree.
A lot of that. Yes.
Yeah. And her like intro videos were all good. And we're just like, this is your first time through. Don't feel like you have to understand every single little thing. And that was encouraging too. It was like, I was always trying to like understand everything and take notes and whatever. I'm a big note taker in my Bible.
Same.
And it just made me stall for so long. So,
well, congrats on that. That's amazing. That is a really big step.
Also,
I love it.
It's a 1-year plan, and so I'm supposed to be done by the end of December, and I'm only halfway. So,
but you know what? Give yourself
still
grace.
Better than
nothing. I do. I tell people that all the time too. It's like, there's no rush,
right?
You know, but it's like, it's just making that appointment and going forward.
Yeah.
And you know, you might fall behind a day here or there. Life happens, but just picking back up,
picking
and
back
not
up.
Let it go, oh, whatever, I'm not going to finish. No, just
do it.
You can do it in 2 years,
That's
3 years.
That's what I'm like. I'm still a lot farther than I would have been. And I'm mostly through the Old Testament. So it's like,
that's
all right,
amazing.
We're getting to the part that's like naturally
happy.
Easy.
The happy part.
Yes, the happy part, the good part.
Yes. By the time you guys get married, did you guys have a relationship with Jesus at that point or kind of?
Yes. No, we totally did. When thinking of my testimony, I just had this realization recently. I was like, you know what? It was so many different points. I think when you grow up in a Christian home, there's so much of that of like, I don't have like this one life-changing moment. It's like lots of little
collection
ones,
of
you
things.
Know?
Yes.
So I had some in high school through Young Life, just teaching kids that would never step foot in a church, that it's all about a relationship with Jesus. And it's not about what you do or don't do, or, you know, what kids who haven't been to church think church is. So that was huge for me in high school. And that was definitely huge for Ryan. We both went to the camps and definitely had some like aha moments then.
Tell us about the first years of marriage. Was it a big decision for you guys to get married, or was it kind of like a natural thing?
He was like the literal best boyfriend in the world for like our first 3 years of dating.
Yes.
And things started changing then with him drinking. It was just kind of, it wasn't immediate and it wasn't awful, but it wasn't
the same.
It wasn't the same, and we just weren't on the same page.
Okay.
And I graduated high school and I started leading Young Life. I was doing hair. I was just in a different phase of life, you know? Everyone had always told us, like, you're young. You're too young to be this serious. Like, you should take a break and try other things, whatever. And so I was like, this is a good time for us to do that. Like, I'm losing my mind with you going out and doing whatever and wanting your cake and wanting to eat it too. And it was driving me crazy. And I was like, but at the same time, I know this is normal and this is what so many people do. Like, I'm not writing you off, but I'm not waiting around. Like, we're we just need to like do our own thing and whatever. And I just had to really trust God that like, if it wasn't him, then he had someone even better. So we broke up at that point, and then he was over it pretty quick. He was still partying a good amount. I just got a lot of phone calls all the time.
From and, him, like, yeah. wanting you back? Yes. And so, okay, yes. Okay.
So we got married, and, you know, once I was 21, I felt better about, okay, I can drink too. Yeah. Like, and I drank before I was 21. I went through different phases. Once I was 21, there wasn't as much guilt attached to it. It was like, whatever, this is legal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can have a drink or I drank with him, and we went out and did things. I was never a, like, drink at home person. And it's just because I wasn't, like, raised like that. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I had seen that in his family. And I was kind of like, we're not going to do that. We're not going to drink at home every night. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's a good habit. And I wonder if subconsciously I kind of saw some of those tendencies already. And so really early on, we had substance issues pretty early on, but like I always wondered if I was being crazy. Like I was always kind of like, my mom's super anti-alcohol, and I just always would be like, am I being like my mom? Am I being like too much? Am I being unrealistic? Is
I feel like we go through a denial time, yeah. but it's like this person, because, you know, yeah. my daughter walked through addiction to one of my daughters, and it was to me the last person that I could ever imagine going that way. So I talked myself out of it many, many times. Like, no, it's fine. Yep. This is not what I'm thinking. This right. is not. Yep. Yeah. And
Yeah. You do. Yeah. And it's funny because I have always thought I'm a hairstylist. I hear bad stories all the time. Mm-hmm. So I would say I'm pretty like nosy. Like I always know what's going on in his mm-hmm. life, or I think I do. So it's crazy to me that he's ever pulled anything on me, because I'm like, I feel like I'm always paying attention. But like you said, I think it's the denial. A little bit of yes. something like really big. Like mm-hmm. you don't want anything really big to be going on. And especially if they're like a smart person. And
yes. That you're like, no, they can handle it. Or the yeah. highly functioning alcoholic yeah. people, you know, yep. it's just like they're this. Going to work. They are, yeah. you know, and so you think that that's okay.
Yep.
So what happened? So he's drinking a lot.
Yeah.
When did you start noticing?
I'm super ADD to this day. You'll probably notice in this mm-hmm. podcast.
I am too.
So I was medicated as a kid. I hated the medication. It put me in a bad mood. It made me not enjoy my lunch at school, which was my favorite part of the day. Mm. It was just like annoying. I hated it. But it did help me tremendously in school. So I'd go in waves of taking it and not and whatever. When he was in college, there was one time he was at my house and needed to like study for a test, and mm-hmm. he hadn't yet, and he was running behind, and I was like, you should take my Adderall. Like, aww. You're going to like do great on your test.
Yes.
And I, you know, as a kid, I didn't know it was even a dangerous thing. I had yeah. no clue. I think now college kids at least kind of know. There's so much more awareness mm. around that. They at least know what they're doing. I had no clue. He called me. He's like, wow, I took that test in like 10 minutes. I was the first one done. He got zero wrong. Like he killed it. So long story short, he became obsessed with Adderall. Then he needed it for his CPA exam. He's an accountant. And then he just, you know,
every excuse.
Yes.
Like, and just need to survive.
And then I just started noticing that he like wouldn't ask me for it. He'd like ask my sister or someone else. And it was like he was hiding something. Oh. Now, honestly, I would have never known if he didn't do that. He definitely had like a come to Jesus moment with an Adderall addiction and had to totally stop. And whatever. And that was like very shocking to me. And we were quiet about that because it all happened so fast. Like I didn't even realize it was a problem until it was a problem. And when it was a problem, it was a big problem. And then we shut it down pretty quickly. But that one was easier than alcohol because it's not everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like alcohol is so incredibly accepted and normal.
It's a social thing.
It's such a social thing. And it's a everything thing. Yes. I mean, everybody wants it. Everywhere and
glamorizing it.
It's very glamorous. Yes. Yep. That's something I've very much come to realize.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Adderall thing was a blessing in disguise. I don't know if I would have ever noticed the alcohol thing if not
she wasn't for
Adderall. Mm-hmm. So I honestly think that was a little bit of a blessing.
Shedding the light on something he's got a little.
Yep. And maybe even for him. Mm-hmm. Because I will say something that I think is true for his testimony is that I think he caught his alcoholism maybe a little earlier than a lot of people do. And I think that
helped.
I think that could be why he already knew he had this. Maybe he was having those same feelings he did with the Adderall and realized this is not healthy. So really how all that came about with alcohol was he was always a binge drinker for sure. To my knowledge, he wasn't drinking every night. Mm-hmm. Now, hindsight, I don't know how long it went on that he was drinking every night. I just didn't know it.
Wow. And you guys were married at that point.
Mm-hmm. Once we had our first daughter, I think while I was pregnant with our first daughter, I noticed he was drinking a lot. And he was kind of like, this is my last hurrah kind of thing. And I was like, good for you guys. Get this last hurrah. Your last hurrah. You're pregnant. Like, yes, you don't get to do
exactly.
That.
There's no last for us. It's like, so this
I
is
was like very annoyed. That's it. I didn't think much of it. And it was at some point when Lucy was a baby, when he would get really drunk, he'd be like, I think I have a problem. But then the next day I'd say something about it and be like, oh, no, I'm fine. I don't know why I said that. So we'd kind of like brush it off.
Wow. So something was nudging him already.
Yes.
Wow.
And he had the guts to say it when he was drunk. Yeah. But, you know, as any addict, like the next day.
It's like, oh, no.
He wants that next fix. Buzz again. Yeah. It was definitely for sure by the time we had our second daughter, it would come up more and more that he thought he had a problem. And then I was on to it, too, by that point. I was like, okay, yeah, we got to figure this out. Like, what's going on here? Like,
was he just getting drunk all the time, or was he having like outbursts of like anger, or was it a change of behavior that
was a change of behavior? I mean, he would get like maybe a little more aggressive, but not really. He's not a very aggressive person. But really, most of the time it was that it was becoming like on a Tuesday, like, oh, me and my brother are going to go watch a game at B-dubs, and he'd come back annihilated, and I'd be like, what happened? It's Tuesday. Like, you can't do that. Or it would be a weekend, but on my way home, I'd realize like, oh my gosh, you're like on another planet. Like, he just wasn't like just normal drunk almost ever. I'd say he wasn't super functional, but maybe he was like throughout the week, those years that I didn't realize he was drinking more often than
he was just trying to keep a,
he did it more like at work, honestly. Wow. Like, and those were my signs. So my big signs were just that he's a smart person and he was doing dumb things, you know, like it was just like, you wouldn't do this if you were just
thinking
Ryan.
Straight.
Yeah. If you were just Ryan, there's no way you would go to work and drink. And he had driven our kids on occasion, and he's, I feel bad even saying that out loud to people, but it just wasn't him. Like for me, he's always on me like that I speed and I don't always wear my seatbelt and I'm not 10-2. Like, he's definitely a safe person. Yeah. And definitely, even back then, one of his top qualities is he's a good dad. So the fact that he was like a good dad that was obsessed with his kids, but yet
putting them in danger.
Yeah. It was just like, this is
the addiction.
Obviously a problem. So it just became more and more obvious. So I definitely think a saving thing for us was before we got married, I don't know even totally what made me say this, but I was just like, we're going to church every week. Like, it's not going to be something we like talk about. My parents went to church every week. So again, I don't totally know where I got this, but I just didn't want it to be like a fight of like, are we going? Are we not going? Like, I just wanted it to be like, we already know we're going. It's just a matter of when. And where.
Which service and which church.
We're going to put time for this in our relationship.
You made a priority.
I made it a priority. And it was like, you know, I don't care if you're tired. I kind of don't even care if you're sick. 2020 kind of threw me for a loop because I'm like, oh, we've always gone. I mean, fever is different. But if he was like, oh, my stomach hurts, I was like, no. Like, it's fine. Well, all you have to do is sit there just like you're sitting at home. So we're good. Let's go. Like, I've just always been psycho about it. I don't know why. I think it saves us more fights than anything. Mm-hmm. Same with my kids. Like, I'm just like, this is just what we do. Like, I don't know what it's going to be like in their teenage years. So I'm not like hating on anybody for the way they do things. But as of now, like, my kids wouldn't even ask me like, oh, can I stay home? Like,
it's just a normal thing that your family does. Yes. I love that because for a long time, it was kind of like that. Should we go? Should we not? And just knowing what's coming, it's something that, like you said, there's no arguments. There's no fights. It's just what you do.
That's just what we're doing.
And what a an amazing thing. If you can do anything in your week, that is just to go and fill your cup and hear the Lord. Yes.
Well, and then they're like your spouse. And they're talking to your spouse. It's a little less nagging I have to do. Like he's saying stuff to you that I wanted to say and it wasn't going to come across the same, you know? I think ultimately what makes me feel that way too is spiritual warfare. Like I feel like my mom told me when I was a kid, like, you're never going to want to go. If you wait till you want to go, you'll never go because something will always pop up. The devil will always put something there. And I just found that to be so true. Like there's always something that you need to get done or you need to, or that makes you not want to go for some reason.
And I love that your mom already poured that onto you because you already went to your life knowing that. Yeah. So, you know, that's great. Yeah. I'm actually going to say that to my kids because I put to my girls because it's like, yeah, it's something you don't really think about.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm going to let my kids figure it out. I'm sorry, but you're the parents.
Yeah, no, you know, I there's agree. No,
and I'm like, I respect that. I'm not judging that.
No.
But they need boundaries. They need direction. And for us, if we know better, it's, you know, they
and
will.
To me, that's not, again, it's not a hard one. So I don't feel like I'm asking them
to go
to do something uncomfortable.
Yes. No, it's like, something to
go sit.
Fulfill the,
right?
their soul.
Sit on your booty. It's not that hard. Mm-hmm. And so anytime anybody's like my clients, like they'll be like, oh, I want to start going to church. I'm like, well, you need to like decide.
Yeah.
You need to just do it. Yeah. It needs to be non-negotiable or you're not going to do it. I promise you. Because I just see it all the time. And for me, I mean, I have four kids. My life is busy. People will be like, what are you doing here? You just had a baby. And I'm like, honestly, I'm less busy than I am most of the time. Like if I let anything get in my way, it's going to happen every week.
Yes.
I just feel like it helps so much.
And so through that life, like you guys are having babies and everything and Ryan's drinking, were you guys going to church through the whole like drinking?
Oh yeah.
In.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And I feel like that was just, again, always my non-negotiable. Like I mean, I'm sure he went drunk. I mean, he never went like stupid.
He looked
fine, but yeah, I mean, and he definitely went hungover all the time. The worship, getting in the presence of the Lord, like, and the community, running into people, seeing people, being reminded of why you like that place, why those people would be appealing to be in your life, you know, just having a community to know that you could fall back on if you ever wanted to make that choice to stop drinking. Like, to just
which it's so needed. Without a community, I don't think we can do it.
No, yes. I agree. When Darla was a baby, that's when it was like for sure an issue. I started.
Is that your
my second one?
Okay.
Yep, my second one. It's more stressful having two kids than one.
100%.
And so I worked 3 12-hour days, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, for a super long time. And so that meant he did bedtime and evening three nights a week. That's where it really took off. That's how he would get through the night. He'd grab something on the way home and drink, and then, you know, again, because he has that in his blood, the genetic alcoholic gene. And that wasn't enough. Then he wanted to the next morning. Then and so eventually it became a thing. It's 3 years, almost 3 years between Darla and Reggie. Reggie's my third. He ended up getting sober when Reggie was 3 months old. Mm-hmm. Between those two is kind of, it just slowly escalated from there. Alcoholism is a progressive disease.
Yes. Like, so he just realized, I'm not doing the best and this is taking over my life.
Yeah, I mean, he'd have moments of honesty and then moments of denial, and I the same. And I would talk to more and more people about it. And so many of my clients that I talked to about it would be like, oh, my husband too. And then I'd be like, okay, well, I guess this isn't a big deal.
Yeah.
And then some of them would be like, oh, no, that's a bad sign, you know? And so I'd have all these like,
voices in your head.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so tough. What was the breaking point for you guys?
I think there were just so many along the way, honestly. I think being in church, you know, there'd be a point where I'd be like, all right, you need other people. It can't be just me. Like, so join a small group, you know? And so he'd be like, all right. So he joined a small group.
Was it any relation to recovery small groups?
At that point, no, it was not a recovery small group, but he met a life coach there and he ended up really pouring into him. He ended up using him as a life coach. Ryan, thankfully, was pretty honest with him about stuff. And so
that's amazing. Yeah. Not a lot of guys can do that.
I will say that was a huge thing for him. That mm-hmm. the fact that he, I mean, open he wasn't up. Always honest. Addicts are never no, always honest. They're I don't not. Think. But at the end of every day, he was honest. I mean, not every day, but you know, at the end of any moment, he'd be honest. Like if I was like, "Are you drunk?" and he'd say no for a little bit, and be like, "Okay, yeah, I am."
So then he starts working with the life coach.
Yes, and he would, you know, weave that in there sometimes, you know, and really they were talking mostly about work. He was a life coach for
business.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. But he would just challenge him in different ways when it came to the Lord and when it came to alcohol. And so I think that definitely helped. Sermons definitely helped. 21 days of prayer was major for us. That's so definitely good. Probably the first thing I tell anybody that is going through this, mostly for me. Yes. But even for him, but mostly for me. And it taught me to pray. Mm-hmm. And it taught me how nice it is to really have that much time to pray, which
we never do. I don't. If you're home, home. And this is this podcast is going to go live during 21 days of prayer. Yay. So this is great that you're talking about it, because our church does 21 days of fasting and praying. So alongside, you know, praying, you're denying your body from whatever it is that you choose. Yeah. And so it's the idea of it. It's silencing the world and opening up this quiet time to hear from God and doing that communally. Yeah. So it's you go and you pray together and you worship every morning at 6 a.m. Yep. And it is incredible. I've seen incredible things come out of it. So yeah. You felt like that was kind of a breakthrough?
Oh, huge. I think in the beginning years of it, it taught me to pray. Mm-hmm. Of course, I've prayed my whole life, but fleeting prayers are just kind of the same thing over and over or whatever. But like, you know, whoever would lead the prayer service would lots of times walk you through different ways to pray and just give me more in my ADD mind a structure on how to do it. And then the corporate prayer at the end, everyone would like pray together. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like the prayers flowed out of me way better. When people say, "I've been praying for this forever and God hasn't answered my prayer," I think lots of times that is the truth. And lots of times there's a reason or not always a reason, and maybe we'll never know the reason. But I, from my perspective, lots of times my thought is, are you really praying? Because I, again, as someone who's been a Christian my whole life, there's a lot of things that I'll think and be like, I haven't even prayed about that.
Yes. Or
I haven't given that a good prayer. I've like done a fleeting like thoughts. Oh God, please don't let Ryan be drunk when I get home. That doesn't, I mean, I think he cares. And I think talking to God throughout the day is great.
Yes.
But does that count as me like really praying for him in the situation? I don't know if it does.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think you just grow so much closer to the Lord in those times. And so if you're not really giving yourself those times, which it's so hard to do.
Yes. So were you guys doing this together?
Yeah. I remember the first one we went to, I was pregnant with Lucy. So we went all the time then, like actually went in person. And gosh, that was my very favorite. Going in person is so different.
It really is. It's like you said, make the decide and go.
Yeah.
Because that is so transformational.
If you can be someone who can go. Yes. Like there's nothing better.
I was going to say that if you leave it up to the minute that you wake up, you're not going to go.
No.
Because at 6 a.m., who wants to get up at 5 a.m.?
Let's see if I feel like it.
No. You're not going to feel like it. I promise.
Yeah. No.
Okay.
But I think like change really happens, even if it's not your specific thing gets answered the way you want it. I just think so much change happened every single time I did 21 days of prayer. And lots of times it was just my heart, but that's huge. Like that matters. I don't think it was by any mistake. It was day 17 of 21 days of prayer that he got sober. Yeah. I really don't think it was by mistake that it was in the middle of that. I have vivid memories of that week, because there were a few days in a row that I had to get up and do somebody's hair early in the morning for a news show. And I came home and he was on the chair watching 21 Days of Prayer on the TV. He was definitely drunk. So was he really praying or was he trying to make me think he was praying?
Uh-huh.
I have no idea. Those are cool memories now to remember that like we weren't giving up, you know, mm-hmm. and
definitely. And you had your third child by that point. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We had also started seeing a Christian counselor, and that was huge. Again, the more people that person can be honest with, mm-hmm. the more helpful.
Yes.
And yeah, we were just trying to get answers like, okay, so is this alcoholism, you know? And within our first session, she was like, oh my gosh, yes. She made him take this test. She was like, if you get three out of these 12, if you say yes to three out of these 12 questions, then you probably are an alcoholic. And he said yes to 9 of them.
Wow.
And she said the only 3 he didn't say yes to were things that you control. And I was like, oh, great.
Wow.
So, and it was like, those 3 were like, have you lost a lot of jobs? Which, for him, he kind of had, but mm-hmm. whatever. And have you lost a lot of friends? And have you, do you have strained relationships with your family? But everything else he said yes to. We had been seeing her for probably about a year. And at one of our last sessions, I showed up and I was like, well, it's just me. He's drunk. And she was like, okay. She's like, okay, so tell me what you're doing right now. Uh-huh. I was like, well, I just gave him emergency and I'm making him a pizza and I took his ID and his wallet and his keys and he's just sobering up. And she was like, okay, well, don't do any of that. And I was like, ugh, why? And she was like, well, that's enabling.
I was just going to say that. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm so guilty of that too, Abby.
I did that all the way along.
Yes, I think, I mean, I did this to my daughter too. We would like, yeah, ground her, take everything from her and just not, or I would be like doing homework with her. Like, yeah. Let's sit here and do your homework.
Yeah.
And she's like, we saw a therapist too, which is, I feel like that's so key. Christian therapy, yes. Counselor. Yeah. It's so needed because you do the prayer and I feel like people's, oh, Jesus will be there. Yes, he will. But you also need all the other things that Jesus gives you, which is therapy, counseling, doctors, like whatever it is, rehab, you know, community, small groups, recovery, so much. So don't be fooled to think all you need is Jesus, because Jesus gives you him and everything else.
Yeah. I think what you said, Christian counselor, I think that's huge.
I do too.
Because I think at different points, I mean, other people might have told me to walk away, you know?
Really? Yes.
And I think she wasn't, I mean, I'm under no impression that she wouldn't have let me in a terrible situation, mm-hmm. but she didn't make me feel that way at all, you know?
And I was going to add this to you too, and people who are possibly listening or watching this and are in a terrible situation that they are being bitten.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. There's like different scenarios that you should not.
No.
Definitely not. Most definitely not stay in that relationship. Right. You should go get help and then have the person also get help. They need to want to get
100%. Yeah.
Right. And so they need to help themselves and then maybe later you can go back to it. So it's different scenarios. But
for sure.
I understand that it's just like, and especially nowadays, it's just a quick like, oh, this is not working for me anymore. Goodbye. You know, like.
And I would have missed out on so much. So that's why I say that. Not just because that's the answer I'm supposed to say. It's because when I look at him now, I like,
wow.
I cry so often because I'm just like, he's better than me.
It's a miracle.
I mean, I'm just like, I can't believe I would have missed all of this.
Like, I feel the same way about my daughter. She's like, it's such a miracle to see them healed that way.
Yeah.
Because this can be a lifelong disease.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a lifelong disease that you have to give it to Jesus. But at the same time, it can be a battle, long life battle. And to see them recover is...
And I don't know
such an amazing
if
gift.
It's the same for you, but his relationship with Jesus
completely
changed.
Same. She didn't really have one. Like,
and really, even
it's
for
convenient
me.
To not believe, you know, while you're going through that. It's like, I don't know about this Jesus thing. I'm like, well, of course you don't, because you know you're not supposed to be doing those things.
Yeah.
But you are. So in the community too, like she started going to the school, a church, and that it's surrounding herself with all of this, you know, pouring
like-minded people,
just people who were pouring Jesus into her. It was so huge in her recovery. Okay, so then 17th day of 21 days of prayer.
Sorry, gosh, see, she was like, you know, you're enabling him. And I was like, That is not how I see it. I just want my husband back because I don't want to parent my kids by myself.
Yes.
Like, I'm, that's why I do it. I'm not doing it because I'm being so nice to him. I'm,
well, you're
like,
protecting him from dying. I just wanted to get back.
Yes, I guess. But it was honestly, it was a little more selfish. Like, I was like, I just want him back so he can help me out.
Yeah.
Like, that was more than anything.
I understand.
And he was willing, like, I can't tell you how many times he'd be laying in bed and hand me all his stuff. Like, wow. He like kind of wanted it. Mm-hmm. Like, he knew if he held on to that stuff, you know, as soon as the buzz wore off, he'd head out and get more. Yeah. She said, give him all the stuff back. Don't do that. Whatever. So I did. And it only lasted a couple more days. Mm-hmm. But we had never done that before where it was like, how far will you go if I let you just ruin yourself? Like, mm-hmm. if I don't save you, how far will you go? And I think it scared him enough because...
Did you have that conversation with him? Did you tell him that? Or
yeah, I mean, he was drunk, but yeah. It was kind of like, mean, this... you got to do this on your own. At some point, a couple days later, he handed me his stuff again. And I felt like, though, it was kind of like surrender. And I took it. I was like, I'm done with this too.
Yeah.
The next morning I had a wedding party to do and our moms were both at the house when he woke up. And he said that morning, he said, I had never gotten on my knees and like gave it to God.
Aww.
He's like, I begged God to take the desire from me. And I had like just pleaded with him to not let me be an addict and asked him why me and why would I have to go through this and whatever. But he's like, but I had never been like, help me do this for me. Like, mm-hmm. I can't do this on my own. Like, he's like, I never surrendered it to God. And he did that morning and he never looked back. So,
wow. That's so powerful.
Great. It was so great.
I think, like, take the desire away from me. That's such a powerful sentence. And we never think to say that, but it is. Like, God tells us, be specific. He knows what we need, but he still wants us to ask.
He still wants us to say
this is in the Bible. Yes.
Yep.
And so we say that, you know, I am desiring things. I'm desiring things of this world. Take this away from me. This is not, you know, I want your will to be done. So that's so powerful. So then... That was a new life.
You know, we talked to the counselor quickly after that. Like, all right, so what now? Because naturally, I want to babysit him for the rest of my life. Like, I want to.
It's kind of dangerous to go. Is it dangerous to just quit cold turkey? Or
yes, and that's one of the many reasons I wonder if we caught it earlier than some people do. Because, I mean, he would shake and sweat and.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he. It looked through, like the withdrawals, big time. I don't know how dangerous it was. Mm-hmm. We didn't know anything. So.
Well, and you have God too. And I feel like we do the natural and he does the supernatural, right? So it's like you give it to God. He's going to walk you through and just, okay.
Our whole story for me is the biggest blessing of my life, honestly. It's crazy now to look back and think of how scared I was when I first realized he was an alcoholic of like, I would say to the people I talk to, like, the worst thing that could happen is he's a full-blown alcoholic. And the second worst thing is he could never drink again in his life. How terrible. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like, it has been the biggest blessing on my life. And the main reason being it changed my faith so much too.
Yeah.
Because again, when you grow up in a Christian home, I'm like, I believe because I believe. I've always believed and it's worked out for me. So it's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, but I wasn't ever like, sure. And Ryan certainly wasn't sure. I mean, he was enough to go to church and to claim to be a Christian.
He was checking the boxes.
Yeah,
you guys
he
were
was,
going, doing.
He was good with that.
But you didn't have a personal revelation.
Yeah, not really. No. Yeah.
Until that.
Yes, that was by far the biggest personal revelation in my life is seeing God transform him. And him being able to be like, there's no way that wasn't God. Like, that's just how he feels. He's like, hands down, could never convince me God isn't real now. And for him to be able to pass that on to our kids and to other people, like, I don't know. When people used to be like, what's your testimony? I'd be like, I don't know. I mean.
You have a great one now.
God's been good to me. I don't know. Like, but now I'm like, gosh, he really took something that could have been horrible and made it amazing and made it such a blessing and made it such a testimony, like I said, for our kids more than anything. Like, I'm just like, of course I'm scared of their like teenage years mm-hmm. and how we handle that and how we go about that. But
you have experience
We can yes. tell them, and he's their favorite. He's the fun one. Like, if yeah. we're like, look, daddy doesn't drink. Look at him. He's so fun. Like, you don't need it. We have the best firsthand example.
How has it been navigating the non-drinking years? Because like, I quit drinking for 2 years when my daughter was, you know, going through all the struggles, and I felt like I needed to be 100% clear-minded, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. and like aware of all the things, because, you know, there was things happening in the house, or like leaving in the middle of the night, or sneaking yeah. in the cars, and like, not just her, but all the other kids too. So we weren't aware, and yeah. I'm like, I need to be just sharp and the fact too that I wanted to prove that you can have fun without yeah. having a drink. And that yeah. was challenging, because I also come from a very big drinking family, that to us it's just a normal thing to do. You go to a party, you're always yeah. with a beer in yeah. your hands. Yep. That's normal. And so to not have that and yeah. still go to the party was like very intimidating, yeah. you know, yeah. like, how am I going to do this?
Yeah.
And it was like a learning process. But to me, it was, honestly, it was like, I could have not walked what I walked through yeah. drinking.
Right.
I had to quit. And yeah. it was so, so great that it always sometimes makes me wonder, why did I go back? But right. I think the biggest thing is the social life.
Yeah.
I had no desire of socializing yeah. or with a bunch of people. I would still obviously right. love to get together with people yeah. that are super close, but not like, yeah. I didn't need to be doing things all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm super social. Like she mm-hmm. said, I'm an Enneagram 7. I like being with yeah. people. So that was my biggest fear. I was just like,
what's going to happen now?
Yeah. I sometimes think that's why we still got along in the midst of everything. There's lots of reasons. I think definitely God gave me a grace that I don't always have, but also because I like going out and doing things. And so lots of times if he was going to be drinking anyways, I was like, all right, well, let's go do something then. And otherwise he's pretty introverted. So if he's not drinking, he doesn't love to be doing things. So, and it's a journey. He's learning to be social again yes. without it. Mm-hmm. But it is hard, especially if you're introverted. I'd say him being introverted helped in the sense that he didn't want to go anywhere anyway.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like a big deal. We also are a big part of something called Stone Dry. So we have friends from the church, Stephanie and Paul Nasher. Yes. You know them. Okay.
Yes.
Cool. So Ryan sits on the board for Stone Dry.
I used to go to the recovery.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
With a bunch of people.
Did you go to recovery for you or your daughter?
For my daughter. So for walking through that as a parent and yeah. seeing a loved one struggle so yep. much,
yep.
I needed to understand support. It. Yes. And yeah. just to not feel alone, yeah. you know, because I met other moms who were going through that mm-hmm. too. And it feels like very validating.
Yeah. That you feel seen. That's what I was
yes,
thinking.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It does. Because it's like, wow, I'm not a weirdo. You know what I mean? This is yeah. not just happening to yeah. me. Even yeah. though you know that it's not, it doesn't feel like it. Because
yeah.
you can tell horror stories to anyone, but nobody truly understands
yeah.
until they have
that in
their lives. Like, yeah. see a loved one struggling with something that you have zero control of is. Yep. Pretty much the hardest thing I have ever walked in my entire life.
Absolutely, 100%. I don't judge anyone for the way they are mm-hmm. about it, because I've never even liked drinking that much, and mm-hmm. It was so scary for me.
Yeah.
So I feel like our culture is just so obsessed with it.
It is. So you don't drink, or do you drink or own? Okay. Like, what's your relationship with?
So at first, strangely enough, he was like, "I want you to drink like more than you usually do," because he was afraid of people like thinking we were like weird and whatever. So I was like, oh my gosh, all these years I like hardly drank, mm-hmm. especially because I was always like the driver. I was always the responsible one. So yeah. I really didn't drink very much, especially once he had a problem, because it was like, well, I got to babysit him.
Yeah.
So I was like, now I'm going to look like a jerk. Like, I'm going to go out and be drunk for the first time in forever. And people are going to be like, what's she doing? I did drink, and I still do. I do less and less, because the more time goes on, I think even he feels this, like, now he doesn't care what I do. Now mm-hmm. he's like, he's turned off more and more by the whole scene too. Mm-hmm. Like he's realizing how incredibly overrated it is for everyone, not just alcoholics. Yeah. The like camaraderie of it is the part that's hard for me. And yes. I don't want to make people feel weird. I like you're sharing a glass of wine with, or a bottle of wine with someone that feels like a connection.
Yes.
For me, the alcohol part of it literally does nothing. So then I have this whole battle in my mind of like, why did I do it?
Yeah.
But I never want to make anyone feel weird about it because I could take it or leave it.
See, but one thing that I've learned in this journey is like, if people feel weird about it, it's because they have a problem. Because if I want to have a glass of wine and we go out to dinner and you say, no, thanks. I wouldn't be like, oh my gosh, should I?
Yeah.
Like I can have a glass of wine and be fine. But if there is a problem, I mean, they probably think that they have a problem.
And you're probably right.
And also that something else that I learned is that alcohol is the only drug that people ask why, like if you're offered and you say no, it's like, why? What's wrong with you? Are you a former alcoholic? Do you have a problem? Yeah. Like, can I just not want to have a drink? Yeah, yeah. You know, and the more you know and research about alcohol, it's bad.
Yeah,
no. I mean, it's straight up poison. It's very slowly, you know, killing you, but it's like just numbing you. There's nothing good. All the things that we discover, oh, wine has all of this. You can get that from food, people. We can get that from coffee. We can get that from elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm saying as a wine lover myself.
Right.
But I think that it's just an excuse that we need to have a drink. And it's just not, no, you don't need to get your little fake vitamins from wine.
I have my glass of red wine.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's tough because it's very glamorized.
So and
it's,
honestly, like most recently, the times I've drank, I mean, I'm more likely to take shots with someone than get a glass of wine at dinner.
Really?
But it's because it's like what somebody asked me to do and I love connecting with people.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I wish it was shots of cake. I love cake.
Let's make that a thing.
And I noticed when I was pregnant, I didn't want to go to a wedding pregnant. I was like, oh, that's going to suck.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. I had, you so leave almost feeling drunk because you're just, and again, I'm giving alcohol too much credit. You leave feeling the joy that's spread around the wedding.
That you're supposed to.
Yes. And all that time you give the credit to the alcohol when really it's a crutch that some people need to loosen up.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
And that's still like what Ryan's recovering from for sure is... It took me a long time to remember the whole reason I liked him, and I feel stupid even talking about eighth grade, but the whole reason I liked him is he was fun. Aww. He was so fun. I loved his personality. Honestly, I got lucky that I think he's so hot now, but even then, I didn't even think he was that cute. I thought his personality was amazing. I was like so obsessed with him, but alcohol took that from him because it was easier to be fun drunk.
Mm.
And then now he's like slowly relearning how to loosen up sober.
Without it.
Yeah.
And how about when you leave the party too and you see all those people drunk acting like fools and you're just like,
those
oh my
are the
gosh.
Moments he's like so happy.
Yes.
He's like,
I'm so happy.
Now I'm really glad.
Yes.
I think he says one of the only times that's ever hard for him anymore, and he hasn't even said this in a while, is weddings.
Mm.
Because it's like an appropriate time to drink. You know, there's lots of times where he knew he was drinking more than everyone else there.
Mm-hmm.
But at weddings, a lot of people are drinking a lot and it's a celebration, and I've always even felt like in the Bible, that's when they drank, was celebrate when they were celebrating things.
Yeah.
It just feels like a time where it would be appropriate, and he's like, I wish I could drink appropriately. Like, I wish I could drink at the appropriate times.
How long has it been since he's been sober?
5 years.
Okay.
It was 5 years in August.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It is.
And so, not one
slip
through. Okay, that's great.
And I feel like it was, again, there have been some things that have kind of solidified it. He has a family member that has been struggling. And I think that's kind of...
makes him see, hey, it could be me.
Then Satan can't like talk him into thinking, maybe you were just being immature or stupid.
No, like, this is actually a thing.
He's like, wait, no, this is like major in my blood. And he definitely, again, thanks God that God got him out of it before it trashed his life. I don't think there's any reason I need to be like, I'm done for life. Mm-hmm. That's the part that stops me. But I just think there are so many people that struggle with it. Mm-hmm. If there could be, if they could have allies of people that just live that way just because they don't have to feel like the only sober person at the party. Mm-hmm. Like,
and I feel like it's becoming more trendy though.
It is a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. The people not, which I think it's amazing. Like you have so many other options that you can do and drink and, yeah. you know, so I, yeah. I love that people are beginning yeah. to talk about it. For people who are in Central Indiana and they want to do sober living or experiment with that, what does Stone Dry events look like? Where is it located at? And how do they get involved?
They, of course, have a website and it has all the things on there. They've got an Instagram. And their main location is in Castleton, right? At like Masters and 82nd Street. And they have a new location in Anderson. And they plan, their vision is to go keep big going. To have it. Yeah, they would love to have it everywhere. They're toying with all different stuff right now, but the consistent stuff, it started, which this is very close to my heart, as like just having a place where people can party without alcohol. Because again, I'm an Enneagram 7. I love parties.
Getting together, yes.
And I feel like at a young age, I've always wanted that for people. I've always wanted to prove that Christians have fun and that you can have fun without alcohol and that you can have fun, that our life can be fun and full of joy. Mm-hmm. Like I've always had like a strange desire that I honestly like feel dorky and weird about, but I've always had that on my heart. So I remember meeting Paul and he told me about his vision and I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. One of their main things is they have parties at times of the year when everyone else is partying. So
Super Bowl party.
Okay. Yep. New Year's Eve and night before Thanksgiving and I don't know, 4th of July mm-hmm. and St. Patrick's Day. Like they try and just hit all the drinking holidays. So yes. they do that. And then they have like family friendly parties where they do that like once a month and it'll be like music and a bonfire and s'mores for the kids and everyone just kind of hangs out. And yeah. And they always have kind of fun drinks that are obviously non-alcoholic.
Yes.
And just try and create like a fun environment. Their spot's pretty cool where they're at too. Mm-hmm. They have like a game room and
I've seen it.
Have
yeah.
you?
Yeah. Like a volleyball, like yeah. a sand volleyball.
Yeah. And I love that, especially yes. again for the young adults, like those kids go out and
very cool
play all the time. And I'm like, that would have been so fun.
And how can people go to those events?
Just go to the website? Just go to the website and you can, yeah, they're open to okay. the public. So their Thursday night meeting is really popular. It's kind of like their AA meeting.
Which I've participated.
Is that what you've been
yes.
to? Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are really cool. They're just a more Jesus-centered AA meeting. Mm-hmm. They do line dancing once a month, which that was Ryan and I's thing. We like think it's so fun. And
wow.
like I said, I'm really into
that. Sounds fun.
It honestly sounds dorky, but it's so fun. There's a guy that actually, when we used to go to the bar Saddle Up, there was a guy there named Cowboy Jay and he teaches line dancing. And so I reached out to him at some point and we just decided we would try it at Stone Dry and it hit. I just think the sober community needs more
fun,
joy filled things.
Yes.
Like, yes.
Yes.
Like, it's easy to be, not easy. But it's one thing to be sober and go to AA meetings and just
I was just going to say
hang
that.
Out with
and
your
and talk
few
about
friends.
The sad things.
Yes.
And no, we need to be joyful.
Joy.
We
yeah.
are that's what we're created for. Mm-hmm. So if you can tell us someone who's listening, who's struggling, seeing your loved one struggling so much, what would you say? Like if you have any advice?
Gosh, I mean, it sounds so cliche, but 100% chase after Jesus. I mean, mm-hmm. And it also sounds cliche, but take care of yourself. Be vulnerable. Have people that you're talking with and mm-hmm. search out people who have been through it themselves so that you aren't just living in your head. I truly think isolation for the addict and for the people in the family is
terrible.
The worst mm-hmm. part. Like mm-hmm. that is when you get
that's
yourself
of the
in
enemy.
The most
that's
trouble.
Of the enemy.
100%.
Yeah. They want you to isolate, be in a room, think
get in your head.
All of, yeah. Get in your head. And the shame. Because there's so much shame that comes with that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, what's wrong with me? What's
yeah.
wrong with my family?
Yes. Yeah.
That's the enemy planting those in your head.
Yeah. And I think that was a blessing of me being a hairstylist too. Yes. I talk to people all day long. So I was never isolated. So I think that was definitely awesome protection for me. More than anything, feel like God literally walked us through it. He gave me peace that I don't always have and grace for Ryan that I don't always have. And just put the right people in our path and just kept me mentally sane. My big thing would be go to church and do the things that they're saying to do, like get in small groups and do whatever women's conference or whatever they have to offer. And I definitely think a Christian counselor. And I would also say, like, finding joy in your partner aside from that, or family member. But, like, I just feel like it was never his identity to me. Like, it was never, like, this is all he is. Mm. It was, like, how can we embrace the situation we're in right now? Like I said, and I don't know that this is the best advice, but, like, when he was drinking anyways, we went out and had fun. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit around and be mad at you all night and hate my life just all night.
Just watch him get drunk. Like, let's go hang out with other people
that are drinking. Like, and then I don't have to be so mad at you, and I can talk to other people that I like right now. Like, saddle up. That was one of our places because we both had fun.
Okay.
And because I had fun line dancing there, and he would line dance because he was drunk, and we had fun there. And I don't think that was all bad because he was going to be drinking anyway. I mean, he was drinking anyway. So it was like just finding the times and places and things that you can still
do together.
Yeah. You know, when you're taking care of yourself and your spiritual life, I think God helps more than anything, giving you that peace that surpasses all understanding. Like, there doesn't always make sense, but
it's supernatural.
Yeah,
I agree.
What about you? What would you do for having a daughter?
So I agree with you. Just get in a community. I felt like I got on my knees too, and I don't want to sound too cliche, but I feel like there's so much power in that, in coming to God in a humble way and be like, this is it. There's nothing I can do, you know? Yeah. So I'm just like, just help me. And I think that there's a lot of power in that. There's something that I heard from John Maxwell. He said, when there's a need or a problem and it's sensed by a few, that each individual understands their responsibility and give their all regardless of the odds, only that does Jesus works a miracle.
Wow.
And what it is like, we have responsibility too.
Yep.
You know? Mm-hmm. And so what am I doing? He will work a miracle.
Yep.
But I still need to do my part.
Yes.
It needs to be understood that there is a problem, first of all, right? Because there's no, how do you fix a problem if you don't think it's a problem, right?
Yep.
So there is a problem, and facing that and coming to Jesus and being like, what is my role in this situation? Isn't this?
Yep.
And so then God will make a miracle, because can he make a miracle without that? Absolutely. But will he? No,
because there's a response.
Because what are we going to learn from
it? He wants to change us. Yeah.
He wants to change
us. And that's a huge thing too, that I feel like I was just thinking a few minutes ago, I never talked about that, and you hit the nail on the head. I just feel like so much of it was for me too.
Yeah.
And finding that balance of, like, you certainly don't want to blame yourself. That's not what it's about. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've seen some people be like, this is their issue. And it's like, yeah, but how can you come alongside them? And what? I don't know. I wasn't sure I didn't play a part in this issue, honestly.
And the enabling too. Like, I realized that I was enabling her in a lot of things that I'm like, so, you know, overdoing can be a bad thing too.
Yeah.
Like, there are situations that you need to get out of it and let them face it. Because if they don't face the consequences for their behavior, they're also not going to learn.
Yeah. So, yeah, just realizing that you have you need to grow in it too. Mm-hmm. What is God trying to say to you? For sure. I think that's huge.
I do too. And I feel like the community too, that helped me so much to not feel so alone, to get, be able to call. I got a sponsor. I was doing the 12 steps too, and I didn't finish, but it was so nice to, because you can apply that to everything in your life. It doesn't have to be an addiction. It can be, you know, it can be a number of things that you let go and let God. Those are the first, you know, you recognize that you're a slave to something and you don't have control over it or power over it, but God does.
Yeah.
So letting go and letting God, it was a huge thing. And then coming alongside with people that struggle with some of the similar things, I feel like it was really huge in my life, and allow me to keep living my life too. Like you said, you had to wake up and you had to go to work and you had to do your thing. To me, I literally survived this because I had my work too, because I had to be on. I mean, days were very painful when we were in the hospital. I spent the whole night in the ER, have, you know, seen some things I didn't want to see. I still needed to post an ad.
Yeah.
2 or 3 days later that I need to show up. I need a bit dressed. Yeah. I need to have joy in my. So it's challenging.
Well, and you have
but
to,
it's surviving.
You had to keep it going.
Leaving.
Or that would just be another thing that you'd be depressed
exactly.
about.
Exactly. So when you said take care of yourself, I think that's a huge thing too. Life goes on. It's their choice. You can pray for them. You can walk alongside with them. We can help them in that sense. But it's still their decision, right?
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Abby, sharing your testimony. Thank you for, I mean, this is so powerful. I really hope that a lot of people will get a lot of encouragement and learn something new from this talk. Would you pray for us?
Yeah. Dear Heavenly Father, I just thank you so much for Karina here, for her desire to do a podcast when she already has such a huge audience of people where she can pull different people from different areas of life and just reach people with these different stories. God, I pray that you would work through people's hearts and minds, that they would get from this exactly what you want them to. I pray that you would take my words and turn it into what you have to give to people. God, I pray that anybody who's struggling with this right now would gain something from this and just come forward and talk to somebody about it and just realize that they are not alone and realize how much you love them in the midst of it and that they can show up in the midst of it and that they can find a church and go in their junk and not worry about what people are thinking, that everybody's worried about themselves. Nobody cares what's going on in their life from a judgmental standpoint. There are so many people out there that would love to help people through these things. God, I pray that you would bless this podcast and continue to work through Karina. In Jesus' name I pray.
Thank you so much. Amen. Amen. Thank you so much for joining us today, friends. I hope you guys are walking away feeling encouraged and maybe even a little lighter. Make sure to subscribe and drop a comment or review so we can keep this faith-filled community growing. Share this episode if it touches you or if you know someone who needs to hear it. Let's spread the love. I'll see you next week on Karina Faith Diaries. And until then, stay strong, stay kind, and keep the faith.